So let's turn to our interview. And it's always a special treat because Catherine Albrecht is just an amazing, has an amazing ability to articulate and communicate the challenges of new and very invasive technology. Briefly, Catherine is an author and co-author of 6 books and videos. The 2 most popular are Spy Chips and then The Spy Chips Threat. She was a guest on the Saleri Report in April 2010, and we talked about her book Spy Chips at that time. She's the director of the Caspian Consumer Privacy Network. She holds a doctorate and a master's from Harvard in education, and is extremely well-educated in addition on all aspects of digital technology. And so with that, Catherine, are you with us? Well, I want you to know you're the only person who's ever been the hero twice on the Saleri Report.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much. That's really an honor.
Well, you joined us in April 2010 on the Saleri Report, and so let's assume for a second that our subscribers have listened to that. Bring us up to date on what's happened since then and the latest developments in invasive technology, including the RFID chips.
Well, there's been some disturbing developments both on the RFID front and on the digital privacy front. So why don't we dive in first to the RFID, and then I want to get into some of the changes that Google has made since 2010 that many people are not even aware of and what some of those implications are. As far as the RFID goes, when I first discovered that there was such a thing as RFID radio frequency identification microchips, or tiny microchips hooked up to antennas that could transmit information through walls or through purses, and reader devices could be placed in doorways or floors or furniture or really anywhere, I was convinced that, and I believe the industry was convinced, that the place that we were going to see the deployment of RFID was in consumer products, so that they would replace the barcode or supplement the barcode so that every physical object on planet Earth would become trackable. And they envision that's still part of the longer range plan. It's been a little bit harder for them to pull off than I think they thought back in 2002 and 2003. But the plan, just to lay out the big picture, is for every physical object on Earth, and I mean every sheet of paper and every Bic pen and every coffee cup and every jumbo jet and every sewing needle, would have its own unique ID number that would be encoded into a microchip. The microchip would be hooked up to a miniature antenna that could transmit that ID number at a distance to a reader device. And that all of these objects, that we now that we have the storage capacity to actually keep track of an immense amount of data in these, you know, blade servers, and we have almost unlimited ability to keep track of data now, that all of these objects would report their whereabouts, and that a centralized computer system would keep track of everything all the time. And they refer to that as the Internet of Things, in the same way that now we've got an internet where I can just punch in an IP address and I can bring up a website that accesses files in Germany or India or anywhere on the globe. The creators of the RFID industry envision a world where you can do the same thing and figure out where the teaspoon was from your grandma's silver set, and you could pinpoint its precise location in which drawer in which of your aunt's homes it wound up. So that kind of a picture, I think, becomes a little bit chilling once, of course, you start to understand that that's not just about managing inventory and getting things more conveniently into Walmart stores, but that's really ultimately about tracking and controlling people, because really what makes people who they are the things that they do and interact with on a daily basis, the things they eat, the things they wear, the people that they have contact with, the places that they go, all of that information would be trackable and reported back to the central brain, as it were, through this Internet of Things. So in 2002, 2003, 4, 5, in that whole range, we really waged what I think was an extremely effective campaign against the use of RFID in consumer products. And at that time, I truly believed that other civil liberties and privacy organizations, of which there are many in the U.S., that they would step up and deal with the non-consumer aspects of this, the tracking of people or the tracking of money, the tracking of credit cards and the like. And so I always made it very clear from the outset that my organization, Caspian, which is Consumers Against, it's probably now about to be Surveillance, Privacy Invasion, and Numbering, that our group was a consumer group, and we were opposing the use of this on consumer products. Well, what wound up happening instead is they kind of went around us, and at this point, the number one application for RFID that regular people are likely to see is probably the worst possible application, and that is in identity documents and in credit cards. So we are now seeing RFID tags. If I give a speech and there's 1,000 people in the room, probably 3/4 of them have an RFID tag in their wallet right on their credit card. So that's, again, probably one of the worst possible places you could put it, because once you tie RFID and microchips into transactions with human beings in which people have to be identified, because, you know, credit cards are sensitive and they give access to our resources. And once you begin to tie them into ID cards like they're doing in border states with the enhanced driver's licenses, then you get dangerously close to tying them in and linking them in with biometrics and ultimately with the human body. And that's why we've also waged a pretty aggressive campaign against the microchipping of human beings, which we actually have gotten stopped. We were able to stop that a couple of years back. People may not remember this, but there was a period of time a couple of years ago when Blue Cross Blue Shield was running trials of human microchipping, when mm-hmm. we had a trial underway down in West Palm Beach, Florida, of 200 Alzheimer's patients who were literally being injected with trackable microchips. We had Tommy Thompson, the former head of the FDA, sitting on the board of directors for the Verichip corporation that manufactures these devices. We had Colombian President Uribe actually stating to a member of the U.S. Congress that he would be willing to implant microchips into Colombian guest workers before they traveled to the U.S. So there really was a period of time in which it felt like it was almost inevitable that these implantable microchips were coming, and coming very fast. And what we did was uncover, due to a very persistent pet owner whose dog died after a tumor developed around his implantable microchip, she rolled up her sleeves and dug up all of this research from obscure toxicology and medical journals, and discovered that what happens when you put these microchips into animals in the laboratories is that they get cancer. And the reason that the laboratories were even publishing this was not because they were researching the physical effects of these microchips, but because they implant the microchips into laboratory animals to keep track of them so they can distinguish between the ones that have had an experimental treatment or the control group. And what they were finding was that their research was being invalidated when they were doing these toxicology studies, because totally independent of whatever substance they were testing, they were discovering that these animals were getting cancer around their microchips. And so once that information came to light, I worked with Todd Lewin from the Associated Press, and we spent 6 months really doing a very in-depth research piece of several thousand words that was published in all the places the Associated Press gets published, literally all over the world. And that caused the Verichip Corporation stock value to plummet from over $11 a share to just 24 cents a share within just a matter of...
It's amazing what happens when you hit the price of the stock.
I'm telling you.
That's when you can get real change.
They got delisted. They're now a penny stock. I've always believed that they're a stock scam. I think they're a pump and dump. I don't think that they've ever been a legitimate company. And I think that Scott Silverman, who runs the, I don't even know what name he's going by now. He's given it a bunch of different names and keeps buying and selling out shares of the company. But I think that that company, just from an investment perspective, what they have relied on is very breathless media reports about you know, they've been claiming that they're going to develop an implantable glucose sensor that, that diabetics could inject into their flesh, and it would wirelessly transmit their blood sugar levels. Not, you know, there are 1,001 technical reasons why that's just not going to happen. And even if it did, it would not be this company that I would rely on to do it, because they don't even have a research arm. So right. they literally are just a little office park, you know, one office, three-person operation that, that has managed to make millions off of the public's gullibility and I believe fear of microchipping. So right now, to the best of my knowledge, just to give people an update on the implant situation, as far as humans go, I'm not aware of any human beings that are currently being microchipped in the U.S. or anyone actively promoting implantable microchips for human beings in the U.S. With that said, there's a growing movement in communities across the country to mandate the microchipping of pets. So Los Angeles County, the unincorporated areas of L.A. County, for example, it is by law that you must microchip your dog or you face an ever-escalating series of fines that actually gets very punitive very quickly. And there was one dog, Charlie Brown, which we've reported on our chipmenot.com website, which features all of the animal studies and the animals that have died from the microchip, who actually bled to death in Los Angeles County after being microchipped. So it's a dangerous technology. It's got a lot of downsides. We hear regularly from people whose pets have developed cancer around the microchips, and we have put together a kind of an informal registry of those stories at chipmenot.com, and we're encouraging people to visit the website. And if they know of any stories of animals who've had adverse reactions from these microchips, it certainly seems as though the veterinary associations, they're in the pay and in the pocket of the microchipping companies, because it's huge, huge money involved in doing this. The veterinarians make a lot of money from it. All of the animal organizations receive huge donations from the companies that, that benefit from their endorsement of this. And so there's really I hesitate to call it a conspiracy, but certainly there's a lot of financial interest in promoting that and not a lot of interest in reporting on the adverse reactions. So we've kind of taken that on at chipmenot.com. Now, getting back to the human chipping, the places, as I said, you're likely to see an RFID tag, and I'm guessing that most people on this call right now, if you have a credit card, you probably have a remotely readable microchip in your credit card. And you'll know that because your credit card will say PayPass or EasyPass, or there's a whole bunch of different names for it. The symbol for the credit card is, it looks like the letter C nested inside of itself, a big one, a medium one, and a small one, or like little waves coming out. And if you see that on your credit card, then your credit card contains a microchip in an antenna, and it can be read in the clear, unencrypted, by any microchip, any credit card reader that's held within range of it. So there has been, I don't know if anybody on the call has been a victim of this, but a lot of people are reporting, hey, wait a minute, all these charges suddenly were getting racked up to my credit card. I have no idea where they got the number. Well, it may be that they got it by hacking a database, but it may also be that they got it simply by walking through a crowd at the mall on Sunday afternoon as you were doing your shopping, because it's literally that easy to skim the numbers and the expiration dates and even the names off of people's cards by simply standing next to people who have these things in their purses and wallets.
I wanted to let you know, I just got back from Amsterdam, and in almost all the restaurants and shops, I couldn't use my credit cards because they didn't have an RFID chip in them.
Yeah, so that's actually a contact chip. That's not an RFID chip, which is a good
idea. Oh, okay.
The European system is called chip and pin, and that's actually a contact-based chip that they have in the credit cards. And the idea there is that the microchip encodes the individual's PIN number. And so you have to, when you insert your credit card into a European credit card reader, it makes contact. People might have seen these at Kinko's. And in the military ID cards, they have a little square that's gold on the card, and it looks like it's, like a little square gold circuit.
It looks like a little chip.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like a chip. Yeah, it's flat. It's about the size. My goodness, I don't even know what size that would be. The size of your little fingernail, maybe. Your
right. It's like a quarter of an inch.
Yeah,
maybe
about a quarter
tenth
of an inch
square. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's slightly raised. It has a little texture to it. And that is a contact chip. So it's not RFID because the RF part of RFID is radio frequency, meaning that it broadcasts through the air as opposed to a contact chip. So there's contactless RFID tags that are in the American credit cards for really no good reason, because very few merchants even have contactless credit card readers that they're using.
Uh-huh.
So it's really kind of a question mark as to why they invested this enormous amount of money in putting those contactless chips invisibly into all of our cards. But over in Europe, those contact chips are accompanied by a PIN number. So the idea is that if I were to steal your wallet and grab your credit card and try to pay for something, if I didn't know the PIN number that was encoded in that microchip, I'd be unable to use the credit card.
Oh,
so it's an extra
okay.
layer of security and probably a good one, to be honest.
A good one. Okay.
Yeah. Now, the
that
US
makes me
banks,
feel much better.
Yeah. U.S. banks have really resisted incorporating that here in the U.S., and it's still somewhat of a mystery to me why they've resisted the chip and PIN system other than just reluctance to change. But they certainly have embraced the sort of wave-and-go wireless RFID microchip credit cards. So that's the one place that you're likely to see them. And then the other place that you'll see an RFID tag that can be used to track people, and this is really the far worst concern, is in the e-passport cards, not the booklet passports, but the card passports, which are plastic. They look like driver's licenses, but you can use them to cross over the border into Canada or Mexico or the Caribbean. And those ID cards, those e-passport cards, are also available incorporated into the driver's licenses of several of the border states. So Michigan, New York, Washington State, I believe Arizona, and I think some other states were looking into this as well, have given their drivers, their citizens, an option that when they sign up for their driver's license, they can check a box and have the e-passport RFID technology incorporated directly into their driver's license. And what that does, that's actually an extremely disturbing program, because the RFID tag that they've put into the e-passport cards and into the border driver's licenses, called enhanced driver's licenses, that is actually run not on a secure standard. And you would think that the State Department claims that this is for enhanced security. But the problem with it is that the standard that they chose to use in those cards is the same standard that is used in all of the product tagging technologies. So if you have, just to simplify what I'm saying there, if you have, a Michigan State enhanced driver's license in your wallet and you walk into a Walmart store, the Walmart store will have readers in it to manage its inventory, because as of 2005, Walmart has been requiring its suppliers to put RFID tags on the crates and pallets that go into their warehouses, and now they're putting them onto the packaging of quite a few of the products in their stores. And so there are reader devices to keep track of those things for inventory management. And what people don't realize is if you have one of these ID cards and you stand anywhere near a shelf that has an RFID reader in it, the Walmart shelf will read your ID card right through your wallet or your pocket or your purse or your backpack. And in fact, the RFID reader can't prevent itself from reading that information because it's transmitted in the clear. So that's an enormous problem. It is a problem that the RFID industry itself was absolutely horrified when the State Department said that they were going to use this EPC or electronic product code standard in government-issued secure identity documents because it's easily cloned, it's easily hacked. I have actually demonstrated a device at the Michigan State Legislature that I can literally hold a device the size of a pager in my hand. I can walk near anyone who has one of those enhanced driver's licenses in their pocket or their wallet. I can stand next to them on the elevator. I can push a little green button on this pager-sized device and capture the number off of it without their knowledge. And then I can push another little button right next to that green button, and I can begin transmitting that number myself. And I can use it to pose as them, pop open their office door, or any other thing that's tied up with that number. So it's really shocking, and I believe it was shocking to the RFID industry as well, which submitted many, many pages of testimony saying you're out of your mind, State Department, to use the electronic product code. That's designed for maximum read range, which can be 30, 60 feet away. It's designed to be read through walls. It's designed to be read in the clear with no encryption, and it's designed for maximum reading and trackability. So it is my belief that the government intentionally selected a standard that they knew would be compatible with reader devices that are being put in place in public places to manage inventory so that they would be able to create an infrastructure for also tracking and monitoring people as they walk around with these devices embedded in their ID cards. So that's kind of the nutshell update on that. As far as the, people always ask me, what's it going to take for the human, for the U.S. public to be willing to roll up their arms and get microchipped? And I believe it's probably going to take our generation dying off, to be honest. I don't think our generation is ever going to accept that. So what they're doing now, they've taken a page directly from Hitler's playbook, and they're going after the kids. Right. And in San Antonio, Texas, we have a campaign underway at chipfreeschools.com. San Antonio, Texas, the Northside Independent School District is running a pilot this year in which 4,200 middle school and high school students at one middle school and one high school have been issued RFID active tracking badges that they are required to wear while they're on campus and on the bus. And what these are, they're active RFID tags, which means that unlike the ones I've been describing where you have to activate them with a reader, these actually have two button batteries on board or two cell batteries, and they transmit a continual 140-foot swath of personal information at all times, 24 hours a day. So these kids have these active EMF-emitting devices, and having just come through a two-year breast cancer saga myself, I can tell you the idea of having an active EMF transmitter literally hanging between a girl's developing breasts in junior high school and high school 24 hours a day. It works out to something like 14,000 hours. I mean, I was doing the math on it. It's shocking that that's the one place you really don't want to have constantly emitting EMF energy. But even putting aside the health risks of this, the way the system works, they've taken the entire school environment and they've placed reader devices into the ceiling. They're very unobtrusive. They're every 100 feet. And with that technology, they are able to maintain a constant monitoring and location pinpointing of every single student in that school, in both schools, the entire time they're on campus. What's even more disturbing is when the kids go home, they continue to have these things in their backpacks or around their necks, and they're broadcasting, if a child is in their bedroom in the average San Antonio suburb, you could walk down the sidewalk and be able to pinpoint the location of those children because they're beaming out this 140-foot swath of their unique ID number. So we've mounted protests against this. We've gone to speak before the school board on this multiple times. They've silenced us. They've essentially said that they're not willing to take any further testimony. They don't want to hear from parents. There is one brave student, Andrea Hernandez, who is in 10th grade, who has been, she's an honor student, and she, for religious reasons, has stood up and said that she does not want anything to do with this technology. And they've been terribly punitive with her, and they've even threatened her with expulsion. So she can't eat lunch with the other kids. She wasn't allowed to vote for the homecoming queen. They've been bribing the kids with candy and gifts, and she has not been, she's very publicly not been given the candy when the other kids get it. And so it's really been a shaming exercise there. The good news, I suppose, we've gotten a tremendous amount of media attention on this. She's been on, the BBC and Times of London and I don't know where all else. She's been all over the world talking about this now. So it certainly is something where the adults are scandalized, but she reports that a lot of her friends at the school just kind of shrug and say, well, what do you expect? It's part of the modern world. So that's kind of the latest. I think that's our big battle right now. If we are not able to stop this pilot program that's taking place in San Antonio, then They're going to roll it out to all of the schools across the Northside Independent School District and then probably all across the state of Texas. And at that point, it's going to be really, really hard to put out the forest fire that's going to come from that. And what worries me the most is, you know, some of these kids are 16, 17 years old, and within 10 years, they're going to begin making policy decisions for the rest of us. And if they're trained and conditioned at this point to think that it's appropriate to for people to have monitoring devices that let authorities monitor their location all the time, then, you know, that we will have lost, I think, the one thing standing between us and total RFID insanity, which is the fact that people say no to it. So that's the big battle, I think, on the human and the animal tracking front. And that's kind of the update on RFID. So I didn't know if you had any questions on the whole RFID.
One of the things I found when I worked in government was it was very hard to conceptualize about how this data could be aggregated with other data and used with ill intent behind it, and the power of data in a whole variety of different ways. And I posted the new DVD that you're featured in, The Shadow Government.
Oh, good, yeah.